Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to another extra Roker Report podcast, a Roker Report extra podcast. I always call it that. It's a player interview, isn't it? But been looking forward to this one for a little while. I think yous have as well. Someone who knows a little bit about playing for Sunderland, a little bit about beating the Mags, a little bit about scoring screamers. Mr. Phil Bardsley, how are you doing? Are you all right, mate?
Good evening. How are we?
Yeah, good, man. We're good. We're actually doing all right as a football club for once, so everyone's merry in Weir side. How's Burnley, all right?
Yeah, Burnley's not bad. It's had a tough start to the season. Europe was obviously an enjoyable experience, but we've just struggled in the league this season, and it's pretty disappointing, to be fair. It's we need to pick up some points and some results rather quickly.
Yeah, it's funny. I normally end up starting these conversations and interviews by saying, you know, what are you up to these days? But I think it's the first time in a while I've interviewed someone who's playing a higher level than us at the minute, actually, aren't you? But I've got a feeling it's going to be an interesting one this night, if I'm honest with you. So I'll start with the easiest one. Who were the best three players you played with at Sunderland and why?
Oh, that's difficult. Oh, you've started with a difficult one already, haven't you? I'd have to say my favourite player to play with at Sunderland was Katz. We were quite similar in many ways. You know, we wore our heart on our sleeve. We give it all every time we went out and played for Sunderland. We were quite similar characters. Obviously, we was best mates while we were there. And he was just a big character. And it was someone where, when things weren't going right on the pitch, you could have a little glance around at him. And he'd sort of like give you the nod to say, right, let's get wide in here. Let's lay a marker down in the game. And I'd have to say Katz was my favourite player, as obviously my best friend there as well.
Yeah.
Other players, I've played with some obviously top players at Sunderland. It's difficult to narrow it down to my three, actually, because I've played with that many. I'd have to say Sessegnon was up there.
Oh, unbelievable on his day.
Unbelievable. He was tremendous. He could do things with a ball that most players couldn't do. He was very, very good. You couldn't take a ball off him in a phone box, to be quite honest. It was difficult to play against in the training ground, in the training games and stuff. He was very good, very, very technically gifted. And to be fair, I thought he was going to get a big move from Sunderland. I thought he was going to go, obviously he went to West Brom, that's right, isn't it?
Yeah, he went to West Brom.
He might have kicked on from there and gone somewhere else, but he never heard me. Missy's trying to listen in onto this, by the way. I've had to kick her out. She'll just laugh at me for a full hour or whatever it is. Yeah, I'd say Sessegnon was up there. He was a top player, and I always like players like Zenden and Malbronk were technically gifted as well.
Great players.
Phenomenal. They were another two. Just come in professional, understood the club. Every time they went on the pitch, they made a difference. Good lads in the dressing room, and just all round top pros. I mean, if you look at the CV, especially Bolo's CV, it's incredible.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
Like, unbelievable. What a player, honestly. But I say he bought into everything about Sunderland. That's what we all loved about him. He could have been, you know, he could have been fun time Frankie and big time that, but he was outstanding. His attitude was spot on, and he was a top player.
So, taking you back to 2008, 10 years ago now, geez.
10 years ago, yeah. That's making me feel really old, by the way, that.
It's making me feel really old, mate.
I'm 33, by the way. I'm kicking on now. I'm still plodding on.
You're still doing all right. You were on loan at Sheffield United, sorry, tell a lie. And you had obviously, I think there was a deal in place for you to sign. And I think I probably know the answer to this because Roy Keane's here. You're a Man United lad, but he wants to bring you in. I can imagine it's probably at the time a better move for you, but how did the move happen?
It was quite funny actually, because I went out training. Oh, actually before I went out training, so Alex pulled me, he said, obviously not played much regularly. Obviously Gary Neville was still flying high and obviously playing for United and England. And the gaffer pulled me, he just said, obviously you're not playing much. I feel like you're going a bit stale. There's an opportunity. You can go, obviously, and sign permanent for Sheffield United. I think Sheffield United and Burnley at the time it was. So I went out to train, come back in, and I had a missed call on my phone. I was like, all right. So I rang it back. There's a voicemail. Listen to the voicemail. It was Roy. So I rang him back. I rang him back straight away. I got in the car and obviously had a chat with him about coming up to Sunderland. It was a no-brainer. It took about 30 seconds for me to make the decision, and you know what a decision it was.
And that was Roy Keane. Was that Roy Keane or the club, or was it a mixture of both?
Just everything. Obviously, a couple of friends were there on loan, Danny Simpson and Johnny Evans, and they absolutely loved it. It was a bit of both, to be honest. Obviously, I wanted to work with Roy again because I always felt as a player when I played with him, even though I was a young lad at the time, he always got the best out of me. And you know, I wanted to experience it as a manager, and you know, I'm glad I did that because I really enjoyed it. And he took me up to Sunderland.
And I think, you know, going back to that time, I remember the January signings we made was obviously yourself, Johnny Evans are the two that I remember. That's what really changed for me the outlook of the season that we had, and we became really, really strong towards the end of that season.
Yeah, coming in the January it was, and we had Birmingham at home. I think it was 2-1. We won 2-1.
1-0, 2-0, it was Radu Priga.
Oh, 2-0 it was, yeah, sorry, Radu Priga, yeah. And it's a blast in the past, though, Radu, boy. yeah, obviously coming main with debut, and that was it then. But it's still quite all new to me because, obviously, I was on my own, obviously living up there. So my first sort of like 12 months, I was up and down, back home, seeing my mates, going home, coming back, and obviously, as soon as I got settled and obviously the missus and et cetera, it was, there was no reason for me to go back home. And obviously, I settled into life up there and obviously playing golf and, you know, just everything about the place. I just loved it.
And if there's one thing I remember about like your time at the club, which was quite odd, I suppose, looking back, was that there was always competition for your place. There was always someone new that was brought in. Start of the season, and I think the first time it happened, obviously you got brought in the January, you played in the team, I think yourself and Johnny Evans, when you got injured before that Newcastle game, everyone bemoaned that happening because it was a settled back four, but then Roy Keane brings in Pascal Chimbonda. Now obviously it didn't work out at the time, but when he brings in a brand new right back for what, 6 million quid, did he say anything to you, or was it just a case of competition?
No, I think it was purely down to competition. It's quite funny, him, Chimbonda, to be fair, because as soon as he come in, we did a defending exercise, and Ricky Sprazier took the session. The attacking players were just bombing balls and tossing balls into the box, and obviously we had to clear them. We had to clear like 4 to 5 balls each, and a couple of balls went into the box, and Pascal just declined to head the ball.
Why?
He just had his braids done. He just had his braids tightened and he just refused to head the ball, and I was just like, there's no way in a million years this guy's keeping me out of this team. Oh, but it was comical. But his first day he parked in Roy's spot, he parked in the gaffer's spot. He was a character, to be fair. It was so funny. But yeah, I say players come in for competition, and you know, it gets the best out of you. I think obviously that season when Roy went, and then obviously Brucey came in. I've obviously known Steve since I was 9. I used to play with Alex in Man United Academy, School of Excellence. And he had a bit of a beam up on it because obviously, you know, Quinn pulled me towards the end of that season and he said, come on, try and get the lads over the line to safety and obviously renew your contract and this and that. So obviously I went away in the summer thinking I was going to come back and sign a new deal, and obviously a new manager wants to come in and assess everyone, and I had a bit of a sulk on, to be fair, because when I had the chat with Niall, it was like, right, as soon as you come back the contract will be signed, blah blah blah. And then I don't know about my attitude. I was sulking a little bit, but obviously Steve at the time didn't take too kind to it, and probably not my best season at Sunderland, to be fair. And that's what drove me on the following season, obviously, to get into the team and obviously win Player of the Year.
And it's funny when you won Player of the Year, because it was left back you played, wasn't it?
Yeah, I really enjoyed that, to be fair. I really did. It was new to me, because I've never, obviously, when I was obviously coming through the system at Man United, I always played right centre half, even though I'm a midget. I always played right centre half. But obviously, I made my debut and played right back, and so there from in, I've always played right back. But it was a good experience. I really enjoyed it, cutting in and obviously linking up with the forward players, and obviously doing the basic defending stuff, which, you know, I grew up doing, which you enjoy doing most of all.
And just, you kind of touched on it already, I just want to take you back to a little bit before that. We talked about, you know, that season when you came in, I've spoke to a few players from that time frame and that time period, and the strength in the team spirit was massive in, like, the season that you came, the amount of games you won the last minute. And then come the summer, he brings in Cisse, he brings in Chimbonda Diouf, changed the dynamics a little bit. How did that change the atmosphere in the dressing room? Because you had, like, a core of British players beforehand that would, like, work their bollocks off each other, really.
Yeah.
And then you had, you hear the stories, you know the stories.
They were just strange. I wouldn't say they were actually bad lads, or they were just strange signings at the time, because obviously the type of characters they weren't the type of characters you thought Roy would buy as a manager. But to be fair, they come in, they weren't as bad as you'd think they were around the training ground, around the place and that. It was just the timing, and I think Cisse scored some important goals, to be fair.
Oh yeah,
I think he was the best out of the three that come in. But yeah, obviously there was incidents throughout the time there. But overall, I don't think they were that bad. But as I said, they were just bizarre signings, I thought, from Roy at the time.
Good lads, unless they were getting their braids done.
Yeah, should have tightened them even harder, them braids.
Might help, you never know. I think, yeah, there's so much stuff that I want to cover with you, and I mean I could literally sit here for hours. I think we probably both could.
I've been watching Home Alone with the kids, by the way. You're lucky tonight.
Oh well, you know, I get priority. Something gets priority tonight, don't they?
Always will. How's my statue? Is my statue up yet? Or have we left that? Are you doing that another time?
Oh, we're waiting for it, mate. It's just to kind of get the likeness right. Can't get the tattoos done correctly, you see. When coming into, obviously, the season after that, I mean, obviously, there was Brucey came in, which you mentioned before, and obviously Sabrasia in between that. But, you know, with Roy Keane sacking, it kind of felt as a fan like it was sort of coming. But I've spoke to Kieran, to a few players from that year that I can't think off the top of my head, and none of them felt like it was, like, imminent that he was going to go. But were you surprised that he walked?
Yeah, because what he'd done and where he brought the club from, obviously when he took over with the bottom three of the Championship, and to take him to the top of the league and promotion, and it's never easy, that transition from the Championship to the Premier League, because obviously financially and the players that you've got at your disposal, it's difficult to live up to these so-called big boys in the Premier League. But I think we've done tremendously well to obviously stay in the league for a couple of years that we obviously were struggling. I didn't see it coming, to be honest with Roy. It was a bit out of the blue, but obviously we were struggling a little bit, but we felt we had enough in the change room to turn things around, but it just shows football clubs are when it's not going well, you're easy to get out the door.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when I was speaking to Kieran as well, he was mentioning that maybe it was stuff above the football club
off. It gets a bit political, doesn't it? And then obviously the players don't know too the ins and outs of what's going on. We just obviously tried to focus on the main thing, which was getting points on the pitch, and we left all the off-field stuff to the manager and the hierarchy, and we just tried to crack on and get as many points on the board as we could.
And it was a tough season, and obviously Sabrasia took over, and I think everyone knew he was one of the lads. He was a very likeable bloke, but he was never the sort of the answer. And then the summer comes along, and you've got Steve Bruce comes in, and it felt like a dynamic of the level of player we wanted had totally changed. He brought in Catamol, he brought in Lorik Sana, brought in those sort of players. And you mentioned, you touched a little bit before, how you you didn't get on and instantly click with him, but obviously that worked out with Brucey. But what were your thoughts on Steve Bruce as a manager, a bloke, and how did you enjoy playing under him?
I really enjoyed it. I think best season of my career, to be quite honest, in terms of obviously Premier League level and what we achieved. We finished obviously 10th, that's 2010, when it finished 10th in a tough league. But I really got on with Steve. I feel like he got the best out of me. He knew how to poke me and drive me forward, and he knew what I needed. You know, he needed a kick up the arse here and there. He wouldn't be scared to do it. And, you know, I like people like that. They're genuinely honest for you and they want the best for you. And, you know, it was unfortunate the way it ended for him, because I thought he was a perfect man to manage a club like that. I thought his style, and we try to play the right way. And but as you said, as I touched on before, with the Roy situation, things go on, and you know, it's a results business, and you know, it's up to the hierarchy to make them decisions.
One thing that sticks in a fan's mind about the Steve Bruce period, and it is when he lost Bent. I think we all felt that when Benty went, there was just something that we just lost. And I mean, obviously it was a goal.
Yeah, you lose goals, don't you? Necessarily relied on his all-round play, but his goals were vital to us. You know, he scored some vital goals in big games, and you know, we all know games are defined on, you know, scoring goals and keeping them out the other end. And you know, he was certainly good at scoring goals, and you know, to lose a goal scorer, it's a vital part of the season, is a big blow.
Did you see that coming with Darren Bent, or was that?
No, I didn't really see anything. You don't really know as a player sometimes what goes on behind closed doors or what's going on with his agent. He was always quite close to like the younger lads in terms of Jordan and Milo. He was quite close with them, so he never let too much out, and you couldn't ever gauge if he was obviously that he wasn't happy. But he obviously wasn't happy, and he wanted a move.
Funnily enough, one of the other lads had interviewed Darren today, so I'm sure you'll hear his version of events, which has been kept under wraps for a while, actually. But yeah, I mean, there was definitely something faltered at that point. And I think the thing that was frustrating with, and I'm talking as a fan, the Steve Bruce era was those big dips in form that we had. We'd be like sixth off top, and then there'd just be that huge dip. Was there anything that changed in the dressing room? I mean, we spoke to Lorik Sana, and he touched on maybe it was just a lack of strength and depth. Would you agree with that?
I don't think it'd be too far away from the truth there. Obviously, it's a demanding league, and you can't afford to have your best players not playing. And I think where we went through a couple of stages that season where we lost players at vital parts of the season. Obviously, you lose Katz, obviously, to injuries, suspensions. Lorik, the same, suspensions. Probably myself, suspensions.
One or two.
obviously, you lose players through injury, and when your squad's not as big and powerful as the top boys in the league, then it's a bit of a struggle, to be quite honest.
You've just reminded me talking about suspensions. I remember I've kind of wiped it out my mind because it's been so long since we got beat off Newcastle. But the last time they beat us, which was about 100 years ago, you got sent off, didn't you?
Yeah, I did,
yeah.
Big centre half with curly hair was coming bombing at me, and there was not a chance he was winning that. There's only one winner there.
And is it strange to think that they've never beat us since then?
Oh, it's incredible. I got abused the other night, to be fair. We played them, obviously, we lost Monday Night Football, and they gave me some abuse, them lot did. They gave me some abuse. Which is normal for them, though, for me. Which, mind you, when we beat them, I went berserk. Every time we scored and beat them, that was it. Oh,
I love that famous photo in there, that one with you, Marcos, Fabio.
Yeah. Awesome. Great days. I'm paying for it now, though.
They'll never be able to change that, though, mate.
World, don't worry about that.
You played through a lot of managers, right? And obviously, Steve Bruce was the one. I think that, I mean, you had great form under Steve Bruce. You know, I think you're totally right. I think your best season was, weirdly enough, that season at left back. But then when Martin O'Neill came in, it's easy to look back now and remember the Martin O'Neill era as disappointing and like a bit of an anticlimax. But those first 3 months were absolutely fucking incredible. Yeah. What is it that he brought?
Quite weird. I was a bit sceptical. Not sceptical in that way, but from a personal point of view, because obviously I had Martin when I was at Villa when I was younger. I went on loan there. And obviously there was a there's a chance that I could sign for Villa permanent. It didn't work out, and I always felt to myself that he didn't really fancy me as a player. So I was thinking, when he come in, I was thinking, oh no, this will be, this is it now. Obviously, I need to obviously prove another manager again and prove that I'm obviously belong here and playing the Premier League. And but as soon as he come in, to be fair, he was brilliant with me. He had a great relationship with Martin as well. To be fair, he was. I really enjoyed playing with him. He had good staff around him, and yeah, I think obviously this players he brought in as well were good season pros, and it was an enjoyable time with Martin. I really enjoyed it.
What was it you said when you came in the doors? Because I mean, we had we really, really went from having a horrifically bad start of the season. Yeah. I mean, I've never known an atmosphere.
Was that the Wigan game where Steve? Yeah, I remember that.
DeSanto, Wes Brown falling on his arse and doing something. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, unlike Wes, that to be fair, but
it was a poisonous atmosphere at that point. But within 2 or 3 weeks, you beat Blackburn in the last minute.
Yeah, I think you just need to get the troops believing again. You know, the confidence is low. You know, players make wrong decisions. Confidence dips badly. And it just comes from the pressure of what it means to stay in the league. And it was just tough at the time. Obviously, Steve paid the consequences of the results. But obviously, Martin come in and obviously had to lift us. I think he did that. It was when he come in, the lads reacted pretty well to it. And, you know, we got off to some. I think we beat Blackburn at home his first game. I think it was.
Yep, 2-1.
I think Seb scored the free kick, didn't he? Yeah,
we scored two last minute. It was David Vaughan scored a screamer with 5 minutes to go as well.
Yeah, so yeah, as I said, really enjoyed playing under him. He was, you know, he was a character, Martin, and I did like it.
Did he have a bit of Brian Cloughs about him, do you think?
Yeah, he was quite funny, you know, because I can't remember him doing it at Villa, but when he come in, he before a game, he used to get his pad out, like his what his team was on, and he used to say the team in about 15 seconds, and he used to put your ears out like that, as if to say, I need to listen to this, because I can't really hear him, so don't complain or not. And all the lads are like leaning forward as if to say, am I playing it? And the lads would all be looking around the dressing room like that, nodding, are you playing? But it's just, honestly, he said the team in about 10 seconds and you had to just keep your ears open to see if you were playing. But what a character Martin was, I really liked him.
With O'Neill, one big thing that sticks in my mind about the season afterwards is obviously he brought in two big signings the season afterwards where he spent his money. And then we had that game against Reading where it was postponed. And then we went on like a really kind of, it was kind of a disappointing run where we never lost, but we just drew loads and it never really worked out. It really quickly went stale with Martin O'Neill. What changed in the dressing room? Do you think the postponed game could have affected that? Do you think we lost momentum based on like the positivity around us?
But as I said before, it's such a demanding league and the pressures of going out every week and performing and winning these games. I think for a club like Sunderland, obviously it's a massive club, but the players that obviously at the disposal, the squad wasn't big enough. And obviously when things got stretched and as I said before, with the Roy situation and obviously the Brucey situation, the squad was not big enough to adapt and to prod these top teams all the way. And you know, it's tough. It's tough when you're not at your disposal, but I say I really enjoyed working for Martin, but obviously there was a sticky period there where obviously the results dried up, and I said we didn't lose that many, but we didn't win many either.
It seemed very defensive-minded for a long time, and I think it just gradually got stale with Martin O'Neill, and then obviously we lost 1-0 to Man United, I think, at home. I think Van Persie scored.
Yeah.
And then obviously Martin O'Neill gets sacked. And I think people were quite surprised. I think no one was necessarily happy with his performance as manager at that point. But no one, I think, necessarily at the time thought a sacking was the right thing. It just felt a bit anticlimactic. And then you think, well, who's going to come in? And then your best mate comes in. and you knew this was going to come up.
This is what you've been waiting for.
Me? No. I'm waiting for the Old Trafford questions, mate. That's what I'm waiting for. But Paolo Di Canio, the stories, you know everything about it. But let's go back to the day that he walks in the door. What are your thoughts?
He was a decent coach, don't get me wrong. Really decent coach. Obviously, watching him over the years in the Premier League as a player, he's always a colourful character and he was out there. you know, he's quite like that as a manager, to be fair. we got on in the early parts of the relationship, if you want to call it that. And then things, even before the incident, I don't know, I just didn't like some of his dealings with players and the way he was carrying himself.
So was it more your relationship before the incident, which I'm sure we'll get to? Did you feel that it sort of broke down because of the way he was treating other people, and you being a long-standing Sunderland player by that point? You'd been there 3 and a bit seasons, I think. Did it just not sit right with you?
No, because there was probably characters in the dressing room that weren't as outgoing and as strong-minded as probably I was, and they were inside himself. They were obviously, they were probably petrified of him, to be quite honest. And some of the things he'd done, I didn't agree with, and obviously the way it all planned out, everyone, obviously it's clear for everyone to see what happened with the situation at the time of the way it unfolded. It was a tough time for me and some of my family. No one expected it to go the way it did, but it did. And he probably dislikes me, and I dislike him. That's just the way it is. You can't see eye to eye with everyone in football and like everybody. And yeah, it's just one of them things.
Was it because he banned ketchup? Was that what it was?
Fucking hell, he banned more than ketchup.
What was the weirdest thing he banned? Was it the ketchup?
I don't even know how bad ketchup is for you, to be honest. It's not that bad, is it?
I don't think so. Ketchup. I mean, I'm not a fitness guru, but I doubt it.
Just some weird things. He's just done some weird things. And that was the weirdest one. I think it was Christmas time. And I think it was around Christmas time. And all the lads were around watching some when we was having dinner, and we turned up. We might have been X Factor or something, and he come in and turned it down. So I was turning it down because we're using too much energy, laughing and that. Oh, it's comical. So I was like, right, that's the end of the X Factor. No more ketchup. I'm out of here.
No ketchup, no X Factor. Max Power would be done if Paolo took over. He loves a bit of X Factor, apparently, does Max Power these days.
Oh, Max, yeah, I know Max. He's a good kid.
Tough few weeks for him. Tough few weeks for those red cards.
He's had more standing offs in 3 weeks than I had in 6.5 years.
He's had more standing offs than Lee Cattermole, which is saying something, mate.
That's it.
one thing I remember about Paolo, but I don't think you were on, I don't think you were there, the Hong Kong trip. Did he ban you from that?
So basically, after the incident with the casino thing, obviously I watched a couple of days after when it all come out, I had obviously been an idiot and the most embarrassing thing I've ever done in my life come out. That they pulled me in, the fitness coach, and said, "You and Killer are training at 4. I was like, "All right." So do you want to explain to us what we've done? Like, to obviously I knew what I'd done because it's clear for everyone to see. So anyway, we trained that for me and Killer. We just run around the training, like training a whole of the training ground for about an hour, just like plodding around for a full hour. I was like, right. So the day after, I got called in, and I just wanted to speak to the manager, to be fair. I wanted to just speak to him on my behalf. I wanted to apologise face to face with him, but he was having none of it. He said, obviously, I've been unprofessional and this, that and the other. It all stemmed from we obviously went out on the Monday, I think it was a Monday night. And we went to watch Wigan v Arsenal. And obviously, if Wigan got beat, we stayed up. So we went to the CM Arms, or CMN, whatever it's called. And it started off with a bit of dinner, and then it was a shander. And then when it went 2-3-0, it started with Jaeger ones and et cetera and et cetera. Before we knew it, was out in Newcastle. Obviously, a stupid incident happened, which I regret. And then obviously got called in a couple of days later, et cetera. And obviously, I just wanted to speak to him face to face and just have a chat and just say, I apologise for what I've done. And he wanted me to come out and just apologise to everyone and say that was unprofessional and this, that, and the other. I just said to him, listen, I said to the mags at the time, I said, just let me speak to him face to face. I want to apologise to the manager for doing what I've done. Anyway, he was having none of it. And that was it. Banished me from the squad for that, the rest of that season. And then I was to report back to pre-season, I think it was the 5th of July. I got another 2-week ban, and then that turned into I couldn't go into the training ground. So obviously the people in the training ground I've known for 5-6 years, they felt in a position where obviously they couldn't speak to me because they didn't know how he'd react to that. But I was at the other end of the training ground anyway with the kids. I had the kit in me in a dressing room on my own. You know, the kit man would drop it off in the morning. I'd get changed. I'd go around the side down to the far end and train with Bawley and all the kids, which I quite enjoyed, to be fair, because obviously Bawley was a top coach. I really enjoyed the training with him. And then obviously that time's going on. And the pre-season, I think I played in a 23 game. I think it might have been their first league game of the season. I've been with them, obviously, on tour to Holland. And I think it was their first pre-season game. And I slid in for a tackle and I broke my foot.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
broke my foot. So that's probably saved me. And my saving grace for probably being at Sunderland. But if I'm being brutally honest, Mags Byrne and Ellie Shaw didn't want me to leave anyway, even though the Paolo Di Canio was forcing me out. There was no way they would let me go.
Again, from a fan's perspective, and maybe I'm being too kind because, you know, you've said you regret it and stuff like that. But I think sometimes with fans, the age of social media, you see stuff happening and you see stuff going on.
Yeah.
Is it that different to what a lad would do? You know, like that's what
I know, kind of, but when you're in the public eye and you're professional football in the Premier League, I completely fucked up and I was so embarrassed about it. But I just wanted to explain to him and apologise face to face, man to man. And he didn't want any of it. And I thought, if you don't want to speak to me, fuck you then. And that's the way it was.
Do you think, because he banished Catamol as well, and Cats, as far as I'm aware, did nothing.
Yeah, he put both of us, but like, so you're talking about not being able to speak to people that you've cared for 5 or 6 years. I've done stuff for staff at the club that, I'm not going off record and saying stuff that I'm obviously, but I actually done genuine stuff for people outside the football and took them in Christmas Day and treated them at Christmas and end of season bonuses. And I always help people, and I don't just mean financially, just like I cared for people genuinely up there and like the staff. And I think they were genuinely gutted when that happened, obviously, when I got banished to the other end of the training ground, because they had no contact with me. And good friends there, good people. And obviously, Russ, the masseur, and Dave Binningsley, the physio, they were all, Billy Wilson, who sadly passed away a couple of years ago, we're all there, all everyday camaraderie, the cleaners and, you know, the chefs and the people who work in the kitchen, the secretaries, we all had a close relationship with each other. And I think it was as difficult as for them as it was for me at the time, because obviously they couldn't speak to me. And I'd be, trying to be the life and soul around the place when things were good and were bad. And just try to lift people and make people happy, you know.
And then you've got that Fulham game. I'll get shot if I don't ask this. I've got to ask the difficult questions as well. But I remember the Fulham game. I've heard a story, shall we say, that he also banned Craig Russell from the match day squad that day because he was laughing too much or too much of a smile on his face. So that Fulham game, there was that situation. But the big thing that people wanted me to ask you about, there's that Instagram post where it was seen as that you were laughing at us getting beat. What's your side of that?
It got to a point where I was down. I was in a bad place because I wanted to be involved and I wanted to prove that I was still wanted to be there and I still wanted to play for Sunderland. And I wanted him to go as soon as possible. And it was nothing against the club. It was nothing against any of my teammates or any, no disrespect to anybody at the club, because I've got too much respect for him. But it was at him, and that was that. And we just didn't have a good relationship. And obviously, you could see that by the way everything panned out.
What was your feelings when it got misconstrued as if it was against the club?
I had to go in the training ground and explain myself. And obviously, I was up for two misconduct things at the club with the stupid picture and then this. And I was actually, I broke my foot, and then me and my wife went on holiday to, we was in Crete for 10 days. Just, I couldn't do anything with my boots, so I said, right, let's go away. Things have been pretty tough. And so I went away, and then Mag rang my agent just to say, obviously, we've agreed something. If anyone else asks, or my little lads, if anybody else asks from anywhere else, then obviously you're only got fined 2 weeks' wages, when he wouldn't make that fined 2 months' wages.
Obviously, that kind of clears that up. I think obviously you can see that there wasn't a great deal of love lost with you, and I think the same goes for Cats as well, right? Like, we know that.
Yeah.
So when, I don't know whether you got privy to this because you were pretty much banned from the training ground, but when did you see the end of the Di Canio era? Or how did that come about for what you can share?
Probably from my agent's point of view, in terms of when he probably spoke to Mags about my situation, because I knew I'd be out for between obviously 6 to 10 weeks with my foot. And they basically said just time to sit tight. So I knew in the back of my head, I knew I was coming back, and I grafted, and I just wanted to prove that I wanted to be there. It wasn't obviously I wanted to be there. I wanted to carry on playing for the club, and you know, the injury didn't. I think it was 6 or 7 weeks, and I was back. Yeah, so the injury lasted 6 or 7 weeks, and then obviously was playing with Borley at the time in the 23s. I was keeping fit. And obviously the end was near for my good friend.
What was it, a players' mutiny, or was it a case of just?
I wasn't in the meeting.
Yeah.
As such, because obviously I was banned. But yeah, I've heard little snippets come from in and around the meeting, and players. I don't know, and that was that. He wanted players to go and speak to the manager if the owner, if they weren't happy, and players did. He's just
forces on hand.
Players just lost patience, and we first beat in his first when we played Newcastle and we won 3-0. As football clubs and managers, they normally analyse the game and obviously what can improve on this, that and the other. But we just beat Newcastle 3-0 at St James's, and we was in the next day, and he had this meeting about what we could improve on and what we could do better. I was thinking, we just beat Newcastle at St James's Park 3-0. How does it get any better than that?
It doesn't, I tell you.
It doesn't, I'm telling you. And then obviously things just escalated from there, and all the bad blood and all the dislike probably towards each other. His coaching was quite good. He had some good ideas, and it's just the way he put stuff across and the way he handled certain situations, which I didn't like.
Obviously, you started the season completely out of the team picture. We just covered through all that, right? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, Gus Poyet comes in. What does Gus Poyet say to you when you come into the club? Because you're straight back in the team pretty much, aren't you?
I was overtraining with the kids. And he had a meeting with Mags. And he said, where's me, obviously? He said, I think he's still training over the kids, because obviously they didn't know who the next manager wanted or what he'd seen. So he shouts me over. I was training with the kids. And the next day I come back training with the first team. So a nice loud applause for my good teammates that they are. And we do a 11v11 set two up. He pulls me after, and he says, if you do that on a match day for me, he said, I'll be coming to the casino with you. It was nice. And
chopping cheese.
From then on in, we had an unbelievable relationship. Yeah, he's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Loved playing for him, loved his style, loved his attitude. He was just a breath of fresh air, you know, because he not really had a style like that up there where he wanted to play out. And I know it was some of the games we got caught a little bit in this, but, you know, we tried to play proper football and with a bit of needle and a bit of, you know, horribleness from, obviously, the South American background. And, yeah, of course.
What was it that you changed to have like an uplifting form?
He just gave players so much confidence on the ball to take the ball in places where probably 2 months, 3 months, probably 18 months before, players wouldn't even dream of getting the ball out from the back and trying to play in that. And I played in a different role. I played wing back, but I loved it. I loved every minute of it. I was touching the ball in the final third of the pitch, and I was creating chances, shooting, crossing, just touching the ball more often than probably I've ever touched the ball for any other manager in terms of the style he wanted to play, which was unique, and I really enjoyed it. I really did.
And you had that obviously huge win at St James's Park just before under Di Canio.
Did we?
That was a good day. That was one of the one good parts of the Di Canio era, I guess.
Yeah, but, I think I pulled my calf. Well, that one, yeah. And
you got took off, didn't you? That's right. Yeah.
I pulled my calf in that game, but I was trying to carry on running, and I was thinking, this thing's just going to rip right down my calf. I felt a bit in my calf. I was thinking, I'll be all right, because it's a derby. He zoned in, but it was just getting worse and worse. And I was thinking, if I pop my calf worse than a grade one here, then looking at 3 months, 2 months. I was like, I need to get off. And then we go and pop another two in.
You sound like you love the Derby games. What is it you like about it?
It's the best fixture I've ever played in, ever, yeah. St. James's Park, the abuse that we took getting off that bus and the bottles hitting us. Oh, my God. The door opened, the music rammed up. Oh, God.
Does it just make it better when you just go through your worldies as well?
Obviously, the 5-1 defeat was disappointing.
I forgot about that.
Kevin Nolan was actually my man that day, and he was, oh, my God. I was actually one of the few that actually tried and put a few tackles in, just nothing went right. And then when I look back at the game, I was thinking, yeah, Kevin Nolan was your man, and we lost 5-1. I was like, well done.
You were the only one that came out of that game with credit, though, if I remember rightly.
Yeah,
the rest of them slow.
Did a little bit, but like I say, Kev was my man on set pieces, and I couldn't justify my performance because he scored 3. And that was that. That was a tough one to take, that one.
Did that game, the 5-1, I wasn't going to touch on it because there were so many games where we beat the bastards, if I'm honest with you, your players. I didn't want to touch on it. But I remember after that, the season afterwards at St James's, we played, I think it was when we had Martin O'Neill as manager, and then the first 50 or first 30 seconds, Katz just goes and wipes somebody out.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of style of play has continued on every time we've played them. Was there something said in the dressing room like, right, we're not going to get bullied this time the way we were last time?
No, yeah, you've revved up, but the one at, I think it might have been my last one at home when we won 2-1, Fletcher scored the header.
Yeah.
I think if you remember the game, the first couple of minutes, the ball got put down the channel. I think it was Sammy Amiobi playing left wing, and it come up as, you know, for a header. And I thought, this is it. And I just right through the back of him, and the roar, like we just scored, but he sets a tone for the game. And me and Katz were always zoned in for them games, probably too much at times, but I think we had to be because we felt responsibility in them games and we knew how much it meant to people. And yeah, oh, Jesus.
Do you remember your last game actually against them was the 3-0 when you won the penalty?
Was that the last one? Oh, I thought the Fletch header was the last one.
And we murdered them.
Yeah, that was even nicer than if it was at their place, yeah.
We murdered them that day. What are your memories of that game? Because we absolutely battered them. We just outplayed them tactically.
Oh, everything. We ran all over them. They couldn't get near us. Obviously, the way we play, we took the ball in places where you're playing in a derby, you think, oh, no. Because especially when you're away from home, in any sort of game, you're away from home and you want to quieten their crowd. You want to obviously get some passes in and put them on the back foot and just slow everything down a little bit. But we were actually speeding it up because we were playing that well. And obviously, we created chances and we could have had a couple of that first half. Well, we did have what score was?
3-0. Yeah, 3-0. We've got 2 in the first 20.
Or 2 goals last 20. Is that Varney that?
No, we got 2 in the first 20. Jack. It was Barini's penalty. Jono's got the second one. Then Jack scored at the end.
That was the one, yeah. Oh, we ran all over him that day. We was outstanding. And just the bravery the lads took. And you talk about derbies and like I touched on before when you're tackling, heading and setting the tone. But I think that game, we set the tone in a different manner. We passed the ball around and quieted the crowd. And we were just, in every department, we were just so much better. We were just so better than them everywhere.
Yeah, the Jaeger bombs were going with me that night as well. I ended up, because I live in Scotland, and I ended up, I got back. I totally missed 2 trains back to Glasgow. And at that point, I lived in Ayrshire, which is about an hour outside of Glasgow. And I didn't realise how late I got back, and I had to get a taxi for about 90 quid, and I made my missus pay for it. I was that drunk.
You should have rang me. I'd have paid for it for you.
A bit late now, mate. I'll keep it in mind, though.
I used to go in the mill in East Rainton, and that's where I used to go after the games and that. Because we didn't live too far from there, so I used to pop down there with the landlord and a few of the staff and cats and that. We all used to pop in there and, oh, Jesus, after them games, what a night. What a night.
Now, there was another night that I remember a little bit better, but before I just get on to that, right, got to discuss the cup run. Now, for me and for an entire generation's first time we'd been to Wembley, and the ride getting there was better than the actual day, in my opinion. When was it you truly started to believe that you could go and win that cup?
The semi-final for me, beating United. I just thought, if we can beat United, we can beat City. That was it, simple as that. The attitude that, obviously, all the way through the competition, the belief that was growing in the squad and the players that we had, even if we were facing the big boys, we were just not intimidated one bit, and we took the game to them. And what a journey that was. I said to Joe Hart the other day, you broke my heart, you.
Oh, I broke mine now.
He apologised, but yeah, I said he's a good lad, so I'll let him off. But yeah, it's a tough one to take that.
It was horrible. But I mean, going back to just before that, you scored in the first leg, technically. Obviously, it was, I think, class of non-goal from Giggs, wasn't it? Was that right?
Yeah, I'm taking that one as well. Giggs, he won't want that anyway, a non-goal on his record, no. So I'll have that one.
No,
definitely not. No, that's mine. And the other one was mine.
The other one's mine. Definitely yours. Yeah. So the goal at Old Trafford, I mean, I was there, along with another 9,000 Sunderland fans. It was 6 years ago to the day you left Man United. Obviously, I only remember that because of the commentary.
Yeah.
And there was, I mean, I can only speak from my perspective, but I remember Marcos Alonso hitting a shot and it missing the post by inches. And up to that point, I believe we were going to do it. And I looked at the lad next to me and it was just that kind of like, is that it sort of moment. But yes. Last minute, ball comes to you. What I want you to talk me through here, right? What goes through your head? What happens when it hits the net? And what is it like seeing 9,000 fans going to be fair, crackers?
So just before that, I got smashed by someone. And my calf, right in the bottom of my calf, and I had a dead calf, and I was thinking, oh no. And then I was hobbling, and obviously we had a bit of a build-up around the edge of the box, and then obviously the ball rolls across. I think it was Key that rolled it across, and I'm just thinking, these mitre balls, I'm thinking, this is going. And to be fair, I'm thinking, just hit it, because these mitre balls fly, and I've hit it, and to be fair, De Gea has made a meal of it, but I didn't care. I did not care. It's the weirdest feeling in the world because it's my childhood club. I've been there since the age of 9. I left for Sunderland 6 years to the day, and it was just like, wow. You couldn't even write it. You couldn't even... Oh, honestly, it was there. Oh, it was one of the best days of my life, that. One of the best days of my life.
Wasn't bad at all.
Oh, so I can't even remember getting home, to be fair. I got the bus back to the services and I can't remember what services. We had to get a cab from the services. I had to leave my car there. Honestly, because the game went to extra time and the dehydration and just the whole build-up and the whole night. I think I had about 2 or 3 beers on the coach because the lads got a load of beers for the coach. Just go back, Gus said, get the music on, get the beers on. And then we had the... So I must have had 2 or 3 beers, and I honestly can't remember getting off the bus. Oh, I woke up the next day and we're in the final. I'm like, oh my God, that was a good night.
How do you get for me, I can't remember how I celebrated it. I remember the lad in front of me got knocked out because his mate just jumped up all over the shop.
Yeah,
he's lying on the floor. Oh, I punch elbow. I ended up about 6 rows in front. It's one of those goals where I think most of us don't remember what we actually did. We just lost it. But by the time you lifted your head up, Man United had equalised. But I think one thing we don't focus on a lot is that we actually had the mental strength to go and win that shootout. I mean, it wasn't a great shootout, don't get me wrong. But
it doesn't matter. Against Man United, when you're at Man United at Old Trafford and you're in a penalty shootout, but I knew, I looking at the people stepping up, I was just thinking, technically gifted. I'm thinking, he's scoring. And we went on to win it, and what a memorable night that was. Oh, Jesus.
I remember seeing the...
mind tingling stuff, that.
Remember seeing the video of, was it Wes Brown that got the champagne out when he's lying, getting his knees tret and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, Wes, all wounded, honestly. It's not just an old... cop out, but everyone was literally wounded, but the joy, the excitement after it, oh my God, like I say, I can't remember getting home, can't remember getting off the bus.
It was a good night.
On just dancing on tables on the bus, Oasis, but coming from what had happened 6 months before to then, it was, oh my God.
Yeah, as a fan and for you personally, it was
quite
like the same thing.
That January, I was on the verge of leaving, and it was all a bit, because obviously I was in contract negotiations again with the club, which broke down. obviously I was on the verge. It's funny, I was viewing an house in the Ramside, and new houses were getting built in Durham. And I was with my agent, and Fulham rang me, and I was about to go, and then I just stopped. I said, nah. I said, Gus has shown me loyalty and brought me back in. I said, I'm going to repay him by staying, and everyone at the club, what they've done for me over the years. And so I ended up staying and staying up again and being in a cup final.
It's all right, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, like I say, if it weren't for Gus, probably might have sold in that summer window. But so I wanted to repay him and the faith he's shown in me and the respect I had for him.
Do you still speak to him?
Yeah, now and again, give me a little text. And he was out on the team night out with Burnley a few months ago, and Ashley Barnes was obviously had him at Brighton, so we FaceTimed him. So, no, but a top bloke. He was really good, really good.
He's a manager that got me to Wembley. It got me, got you, got all of us.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
You remember as a fan exactly what it's like. I mean, it's the first time for me. I was really unlucky that I was actually on holiday when I was a kid when we got there in 98. Yeah. I was too young in 92. So it was the first time for me at Wembley, and it was kind of surreal. But what's it like as a player coming out and seeing that sea of red incredible. And white?
At the start, we got off to as well. We snuffed them out. We stopped any chances. Went in front. Obviously, went in front at half time. And then sometimes you just have to hold your hands up and respect a team that have got so much quality. And, you know, the goals he scored were exceptional. And I think if you ask any Sunderland fan or anybody, you know, the effort we put in was to the final whistle. And we just got beat off the better team on the day. And that's probably the only thing that sums it up is just the quality took over in the end. And probably the best team won the second half, which was them, but obviously they managed to score three goals.
Would you do anything different in that game if you could?
No, I wouldn't say. I think we give our all. I think Torre's goal was a bit of a, I don't know if it was a shot or a cross, but he was, obviously it flew in, and they just gathered momentum from that. And obviously the second one was tough to take, but I think the third one's just us chasing the game and trying to get back into it. And obviously done on the counter-attack, but I don't think anybody can ever fault the effort the lads put in that day, because obviously we all dreamed of picking a trophy up and taking it back to Sunderland Stadium alike, but they were a good team. They were a top team, and obviously after all that, it's very rare to do it, but I actually shook their hands after the staff and everybody, because, you know, sometimes you just have to hold your hands up and admire how good certain teams are, and they were tremendous, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, it took something special to beat us that day, and they provided it twice.
Because we didn't play bad. First half, we were tremendous. As I say, the Torre goal just probably took a little bit of momentum out of us, a little bit of sting out of the tail. And as soon as they get back and they start rocking and rolling, it was tough to live up to.
It's just so quick, the second goal. If we'd had maybe 10 minutes to settle.
Yeah.
But, you know, what if and what will be.
Yeah, it was a good ride. What a journey and what a season that was.
With the league form, at that time, we actually were doing quite well. But I think after the cup final, it really dipped. I mean, it was around the time I was getting married. And I remember the Monday. I got married on the Friday. I remember the Monday was when we got...
The Monday was, yeah?
No, not yet. I remember the Monday was the Spurs game. And I remember I sat down and my wife, not the biggest fan of football, but she sat and watched it with me. And she was just, Catamol scored. And he never scores. Well, he did definitely not then. So I thought, oh, hang on. You know, you never know. This might be the great escape. And then about 60 minutes later, my wife's like, what happened there? But there was a miraculous moment where we just went, we can beat anyone in this league, and we're going to beat everyone in this league. Chelsea, we've got a result that City should have beat them, beat Man United. What changed in the dressing room, and at what point did it change? And did you ever feel like we were going to go down?
Possibly, yeah. No, I wouldn't lie about that. Just the way, obviously, when you're playing that expansive football and it's all going well, and the style of play, it can be risky at times. And so you were trying to play in the right manner, and it was just little basics we weren't doing the basics right, and we were just conceding sloppy goals. And I think obviously the defeat in the final took a little bit out of us confidence wise, and obviously the form dipped, but then we managed to obviously
pick some great results up, and obviously go on to avoid being relegated again, which was massive for the club again there for the financial side of it, but obviously a personal pride and to obviously spend 6.5 seasons at a club where you have so many great memories of obviously keeping in the Premier League for that duration was obviously it's a proud stat on my behalf.
You mentioned confidence. I felt that when we got that result at City, and we should have won. It was just a shame for Vito that day. But do you think that changed in the dressing room? Did the confidence come back that we could be more expansive?
Yeah, just a bit more belief when you go to places like that and you give teams like that a run for the money. And it's a big case of shit or bust. You may as well go out fighting and obviously try and get results and get some points on the board, because we all knew the consequences if we didn't get the results. And we had characters in the dressing room who were strong characters who obviously didn't let that happen. And I say we managed to stay up, and another great achievement.
So after such a successful end of the season, sir, you had a manager that you evidently have a lot of respect for. Yeah. You can hear that you love Sunderland just from speaking, but then you left.
Yeah, it was a tough decision. Obviously, my agent went in to meet Eric Ellis's right-hand man, American lad, I can't recall his name. So my agent sat in a meeting for about 10 minutes with Mags and himself, and his comments were that he thought I didn't warrant a contract the time period that I thought I deserved. He thought I was past my best when I was 29, and they only wanted to offer me a couple of years, and obviously I felt what I'd done and the way I was playing felt I warranted more than that. It was never financially that never come into the equation. It was just the time scale of the contract, and I just felt like I'd give my all to the club, and I felt like they should have rewarded me in a way that I thought I should have got rewarded, and they didn't, and I had to move on.
What did they offer you?
2, and I wanted 3. I'd say it wasn't financially, it was just the fact of the length of the contract. It was that 4.5, was that 3.5, what was that, 3 years ago? 3 years, 3, 4 years ago?
3.5, yeah.
Yeah, I'm still in the Premier League now, so must be doing something right. Just shows that secretaries are not all, are they? They're just, it was a tough one to take, to be fair, because I spent a lot of time, 6.5 years is a long time, and got a lot of friends up there, and it was difficult coming back to play against Sunderland when I was at Stoke, and it was very weird, and I don't know if he enjoyed it or not. I don't know. It was weird seeing a lot. But the upside to it was I seen some old friends who I spent a lot of time with, and a lot of friends and people that I've shared a lot of good times with, and it was good to see all them again.
There's many people that would say, and this might sound like a kiss-ass comment, but whatever. There's many people that I think would probably say we still haven't replaced you.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? Obviously, it's tough. It's tough.
You don't want to blow your own trumpet, but I mean, surely.
It's tough to find players who go onto a pitch and give it everything they've got in terms of.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You've got to be brave in different scenarios in football as well as taking the ball. You've got to be able to fight when it gets tough and head and tackle, and maybe I'm a dying breed in that sense, with being tough and tackling and heading, and you don't really see it as much anymore, but maybe that's what a few clubs miss these days.
I'm down to League One, mate. It's brilliant. I'm sure we'll have you back.
I'll be back one day when that manager position comes open, and I'll be there, don't worry about it.
Got a few years to go yet.
I've got a few playing years left yet.
Final question is, in summary, what does your time at Sunderland and the club itself mean to you?
Everything to me. Obviously, 6.5 years of good times, bad times, cup finals, survival, friendships. The list is endless. But from a personal point of view, to play for a club like Sunderland and to play as many games as I did, and obviously to achieve and to make people proud every week was is what all I ever wanted. And I'll always look back at at my time at Sunderland with fond memories. I say many friends there who I didn't go out on a Saturday afternoon just to play for myself or my family. It was for, you know, it's for them, because obviously if we was to go down, it'd affect them, it'd affect their families. And, you know, I felt that. And that's where the friendships become and grew. And, you know, I think that's why they took me in as one of their own up there. And I hope that one day I can come back in some department, whether it be a groundsman or a manager. Or a manager. But, yeah, it'd be nice to get up and maybe watch a game soon as well. And, you know, reminisce with some old friends. But yeah, loved every minute of it. And you know, I hope I did everyone proud up there, and I say I hope I can come back up soon and watch a game.
Well, I will go plenty of place at left back and right back, mate, if you're really desperate.
But no, they're doing well at the minute. I'm glad to see the manager seems like he's got him in a good place. I didn't know too much about him before he took over, but so speaking to the couple of lads up there that we still know, they speak highly of him, and hopefully that can continue and they can get promotion this year and climb back up the leagues and get back to the promised land of the Premier League.
Fingers crossed, mate. But thanks very much for doing it, mate. It was really enjoyable.
No problem. Anytime.
Been good crack having a few WhatsApps as well. It's made me laugh. We're pleased to get a good chat, and I hope you enjoyed it as well, mate. And
yeah, did you? Anytime.
Good.
You've got my number, so. And I don't mean peppering me every day, by the way, but you know what I mean.
Give me time, mate. Give me time.
No problem. But, next time we'll do something. I'll come up and we'll do it there and watch a game or something.
Yeah, that sounds good to me, mate. And, no problem with that at all.
I expect my statue to be shined and stuff when I come back outside. And I hope it's shining and there's a nice red and white scarf around it.
They've got me on it, mate. So I'm the one doing the shining, sadly. But there you go. But I'll let you get back to the young and watch Home Alone. Catch you soon, all right?
Yeah, thank
you.
Thanks.
Take it easy, mate.
Take it easy.
So that was all right, I think. I hope I asked difficult enough questions. A lot of people are saying I'm too in love with my guests, but I'm a Sunderland fan. I'm one of yous. That's pretty much, I'm asking and reacting the same way that hopefully, you know, you would. And I hope that it's a good podcast again. On a serious note, thanks very much for the feedback that we've had on all the podcasts recently, specifically mine with Lorik and with Kieran. Phil is someone that I'd want to speak to for ages. It's definitely 100% my era. And anyone who's around my age, you know, 32 or younger, will remember the things that happened with Phil Bosley's, loads of interest and then perhaps negative stuff there that obviously we've discussed, but plenty positive. And I certainly remember in a much more of a positive light than I do negative. I thought he was great crack. I thought he was really, really good, really, really honest. And I think you can't ask for much more than that, really, can you? But thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. And if there's anything further that you'd like to know, I know I missed out the Wayne Rooney question, but don't really care about who he knocks out. On his night out, I care more about Sunderland than what he did with Sunderland. Feel free to check in. Cool, thanks.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.